Is there any nomination? Ms. Nelson?
Chairperson, yes, I nominate Tumi Strong as well as the chairperson for this sports forum.
Can we have a seconder? Is there any other nominations or any objections? So, Ms. Lenkekwa, who's nominated as the chairperson, congratulations.
Members from the department and ladies and gentlemen. As my they used to say in my organization, an acceptance speech. As an acceptance speech, I would like maybe to thank all of you, especially my committee members who have been having confidence in me across all the party lines. Also, I'd like to thank my party, the African National Congress, who have confidence in me that I'll be able to take this responsibility, this huge responsibility in this department. As I've been appointed now as a driver of this ship, I think all of you members, you are the ones who are having a compass, who are having a direction where we are going to. Being a leader of the committee doesn't mean that I must be a leader who is very difficult to you. We've been working together almost 2 to 3 years now. We know each other. We know we are so dedicated in our work. To sit in this chair, you know with the person who was sitting in this chair was so dedicated in his work. And nobody can even compare to him, but we know which we've learned a lot to him. Nobody will change, we will work as hard as we've been doing. But for me to be in this chair to show my leadership qualities, would understand which I must be the leader that will understand and take some advices to you, honorable members, my colleagues. And also we know all of us here, our mission is to advance and to work for the people, for the poor people, for betterment of them. We know local government is a cold face of service delivery. There are challenges down there, but we know with it together we can do more. To the department, I think we've been lucky to have a person whom we were already working with. We are all thinking that what kind of a leader will be sent to lead this portfolio committee, but fortunately it was just a parallel deployment from this chair to this chair. So all of us were having the compass, we know where we are coming from, we know where we are going. If this ship sinks, all of us will sink. So I have confidence in you that we will work, we'll have a very good working relationship, and as opposition party, I know that you'll always stand by your foot and advise and oppose where you are not doing well. But I'll treat everybody as one family. From the minister, I would like to welcome you in this very first. Me and you, we are new in this, portfolio. I know that you are so energetic and hardworking. Person, we all knew the first time the president announced your appointment that you must again be on our toes. I know which you are very hard, you are very strict, and I think you must come over with those natural skills that you are having, because it's natural to be hard and very strict. It's natural within a person. We are looking forward for good working relationship, and to the department DG, the two DGs, I think we'll try our best to level the ground and hit the road running. Thanks. With those few words, members, I don't know, we'll have some comments or we'll just zoom to the agenda.
Madam Chair, congratulations on your election, and I'm sure that you will lead this committee further so that we can achieve our mandate while we are here. As a whip, you have been exemplary to this committee, and I'm sure that we will all be able to be here to support you to achieve where we want to be. Thank you.
Peter?
Yes, Chair, congratulations. Very pleased with your election. I must say, you did say in your comments just now that although you treat us as one family, you expect the opposition to do its job. I just hope you're not too busy, that you know things run smoothly, failing which we'll be very busy as opposition, but you do have our support.
Thank you very much. As a woman, I'm very proud that this ship has been sailed by a woman. And I know, because the woman is the one who do everything, that's going to be changed. The intelligence of a woman is not the same as the intelligence of a man. And you will see the difference. As the ANC, we are very happy. Thank you.
I think we all have our agenda. Our first item in the agenda is the briefing. Maybe we have the agenda that has changed after received the new one. It's the briefing by Mr. Arbaloi, the Minister of the new Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Welcome, your Minister, we are welcomed and we are giving you the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And may I take this opportunity firstly to congratulate you for your election as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. You know very well that we come a long way. We've been together in Parliament, and what is critical is that when you were saying that I'm one of those who pretend to be strict, I was saying the chairperson is talking about herself now, because I know you're also hardworking. I think it's just good and to note that as you ascend the position of chair, you do that at a point where also on the part of government there is a new person, I think. So we will work together. So thanks about that. Now coming to address the item on briefing, maybe let me indicate that with me there are the two DGs of the department and senior officials who are going to lead and identify themselves as they do the presentation on the other items. Chair, it's really an opportunity as a first guest. one is that we are here to commit ourselves. Commit ourselves firstly to promote and respect the doctrine and practice of the separation of powers between organs of state. As honorable members are quite aware that in any democracy that is worthy of note as such, we do have the separation of powers where you have parliament having a role to play as an organ of state, you have the executive having a role to play as an organ of state, you have the judiciary having a role to play as an organ of state. Those are the key pillars of the historical trials political role, separation of power. So we are then saying the first thing that we want to commit ourselves is to promote and respect that. And in the process of promoting and respecting that, of course we will have to promote and respect the interface between these organs of state. You know, the separation of powers is not just a formality in terms of arrangements of organs of state. It's based actually and has the origin from the original thinkers about where government comes from. To say that you deal with a power which belongs to the people, and which power then gets assigned in the hands of elected representatives of the public yourself, and together residing in an institution or an organ of state called parliament, which the world over you will find that even in constitutional states, where you will then say the constitution is supreme, but you then say amongst organs of state, parliament is the supreme organ. The constitution becomes the supreme law of the land in terms of making sure that it defines what we need to do and defines how we need to do what we say and commit ourselves to do. So I want to indicate right from the onset that we will actually promote the interface between that. And as you deal with promoting the interface, it's very clear that you deal with issues related to power relations. Make no mistake that when the executive has to account, the executive has to account. And there can't be anything less than accounting. And it is my resolve and committing myself that this is what is going to be leading us as we deal with these issues. I know the portfolio that I have taken leadership of has for some time been without a fully fleshed political principle, where my predecessor for some time was on leave. And under normal circumstances, if an organization finds itself in that situation, you find that there may be a looseness setting in. You find officials taking the responsibility of becoming the face of accountability, not out of choice, but obviously because there is a sort of a vacuum. You may have an acting person, but you find that at times the people who can speak with authority on those issues become official. We therefore have a responsibility to then say we will occupy. There is this saying of hitting the ground running. We believe that we are doing that. We have to hit the ground running and mindful of the fact that if you hit the ground running, you have to be ultra careful, because you may be hitting the ground that is also running. Mm-hmm. And you hit it running yourself. So firstly, you must check. If it is running, you must check the direction at which it is running. If it is running to the same direction with you, then you must mind your first step. Because if you as the executive, we definitely must see ourselves in a situation where we provide that support. We are here committing that we'll promote sound intergovernmental relations between the three organs of government, or three spheres, you know, three tiers. We refer to them as tiers, three tiers of government. Intergovernmental relations. It's not out of a choice, it's a dictate of the Constitution. Cooperative governance means that we have to make it a point that when we talk about the prevalence or sustenance of the values of our administration across the three spheres, it means that it is all those three spheres that have to be taken on board. So we commit that we'll promote this intergovernmental relation. But also not only committing intergovernmental relations between and among the three tiers, but also when you bring in the institution of traditional rule. You have to make sure that when you talk about traditional governance, you then say in a perfect alignment, promote that relationship so that we don't have a situation where the ball drops and falls in as far as promoting these intergovernmental relations. We will respect and uphold the principles of executive accountability, knowing that you will have to hold us accountable even in terms of those programs that will not be pronounced by ourselves, because we believe that as a collective we are part of cabinet. And as part of cabinet, the expectations by parliament on the delivery by cabinet through a portfolio committee of parliament like yourselves will have to live up to what it says. We'll respond. Even when it comes to answering questions, chairperson in the house, and also questions for written reply, we'll actually do that. Because it's our understanding that when you answer questions, you are debating. Of course, sometimes when we start engaging, you may find that you are not answering to the extent of your expectation. We will try by all means to come, if not exactly to your expectation, but close to it. I know that answering political questions sometimes differ from dealing with an examination question paper, where they can say sometimes you get prescribed to answer questions and so choose from the questions in my Africans 101 at the university. They will say gifted and haggis. So they provide answers and then choose one of them. At school, I used to choose if they say dozen haggis, and they make a provision for none of those in the haggis. I used to choose that one, say none of those in the haggis. But in as far as politics like that, but we'll always, even if sometimes we find that you answer questions and you think that we're not doing that to expectation, it will not be deliberately undermine it. It may be just a question of understanding and building a relationship. We'll have to deal with some of those issues. We'll promote the values of administration as enshrined in the Constitution. We may not mention all the values, but I mean for transparency, one of those values for us, stakeholder engagement is key. We will deal with those issues. That is where we will not compromise. For responsiveness, public participation, and accelerated service delivery is what we believe we are here for. And for professionalism, for us, that good governance is a way of doing things. And that's what we always want to see ourselves. So that's the situation that we then see maybe here as we get to know each other for the first time face to face. Well, to face, we've been interacting, of course, as all of us being members of parliament. We meet in the house, and we also meet in other engagement. The second issue is that we're joining this portfolio noting that there is a ground, either it's running or it's static, if it's running either to that direction or to our direction, but the fact is that there is a ground. There is a portfolio called COCTA. And this portfolio has pronounced in terms of outcome 9, this portfolio has pronounced in terms of other interventions in terms of what it has to do. There has been leadership of this portfolio. So we're coming in where we acknowledge that there are predecessors who may have made announcements, made commitments, and these commitments, they we're not looking at them as personal commitments, but we're looking at them as pronouncing the position of the portfolio. So that is the first thing we're noting. We know that there's a turnaround strategy that all of us are quite aware of. Of course, the main objective of that turnaround strategy, having been developed after an assessment of the state of municipalities, being to make sure that we accelerate effective service delivery. If we were to do an assessment, and I want to commit to a person, we would be doing and we'll be presenting to you our own assessment, was what I did was instruct the portfolio to do an assessment, but also meeting and engaging with stakeholders to do an assessment of the portfolio on the turnaround strategy. Those were supposed to be the receivers of the service to be derived from the turnaround strategy, engaging themselves and making an invitation that also yourselves as our oversight committee, you may also want to reflect in terms of how you see the turnaround strategy. We will commit and we'll present to you as to how we see ourselves oiling the machinery that is driving the turnaround strategy so that we improve in as far as turnaround time realization on issues that the turnaround strategy indicates. We improve in as far as the quality of the service in terms of implementing the turnaround strategy. We know that as we join here, there's a campaign called Operation Clean Audit for Sound Financial Administration. For ours is to make sure that such is realized, accelerated. You know, we are then saying we have to draw a balance between what has been said and what we can say going forward with what we do, so that maybe at some stage we may hold a little bit in talking and allow the bit to speak, so that we see ourselves in action dealing with these things. There is a saying that we need to walk the talk. For us, is that the talking has been done. What has to happen now is the walking. The talking has been done. Is the walking that has to happen? You know, when the portfolio was introducing, welcoming me, HFSN, on my first day addressing them, they said, "Minister, you see, this portfolio is so busy. You know, it's so busy. You'll have to find yourself addressing this media house today and that media house, and there may be 2-3 media houses, but you don't have to find yourself having a week going by and you have not felt that when we concluded the debate on wall-to-wall municipalities, there was a gap. A gap that was closed later on when we brought the issues around the white paper on that led to the development of the Framework Act on traditional leadership and governance. We then see us now having traveled up to a point where we have the framework and provincial governments have their own legislation to deal with the institution. The issue is then how are we actually moving forward? What was envisaged? So that's why I'm saying even in that area, it's not a question of talking about talks. It's a question of implementing in terms of what we said we need to do. I know at times we may appear like talking past each other, but we'll try to find a way where we deal with these issues. We committed to job creation. The CWP, there will be a presentation that HF and all other things, our Chapter 9 institutions, we have indicated that this is what we need to do. This takes me to the third point. The third point is undertaking. I said we commit, we note, we undertake. The undertaking is that, like I've indicated, we'll provide a detailed account in due course in terms of how the vehicle of COPTER delivery is oiled going further. We like to talk about the sloganizing. You know, it's good when you undertake. And this sloganizing will not be sloganizing for the sake of sloganizing, but it's a sloganizing as an undertaking in terms of us moving forward as we continue on the pace of providing a service to government through the COPTER initiatives. We want to reach a state where the people in the deep rural areas, where the people in urban areas, those who are the receivers of services, where the executive, where parliament, where the business community, where broader civil society will say, when they refer to a municipality, all of us will say, my municipality, my service. Now, how do we actually go about dealing with that? Who are partners in making sure that we'll create a state of municipality where people will say, my municipality, my service? We know very well that municipalities find themselves at a coalface of service delivery. Even in areas where the delivery of such services are not the competency of the municipalities, but they find themselves at that area. Sometimes, even being criticized and blamed for the failure of their cousins at national and provincial level. We then have to then say, if we say, my municipality, my service, that talks to how you coordinate sector departments that have to provide service. That talks to how you deal with issues of bringing on board your provincial government departments, and also bringing on board the role of our traditional leadership as part of facilitating development. We will also then say, share through you, all members of the portfolio committee, and those members of this portfolio committee who are also wearing the other titles of traditional leadership, that our resolve has to go forward is to get all those that I have mentioned, in as far as municipalities are concerned, to say that my traditional institution, my pride. That's what we're then saying. If you ask how far, what is the mark that you set yourself to go, is that we want to see ourselves at that point where we even say, even traditional institutions themselves will be proud to then say, we are the pride of the nation. We are the inheritance. We participate. Even in democracy, we have a space. And we'll then utilize that space meaningfully to promote. people would say my traditional institution, my pride. And how do we do that? Is to make sure that our role is actually strengthened. But of course, charity begins at home. What is the state of the portfolio at the moment? How is DCOC as a department? How is the Department of Traditional Affairs as a department? Do I think they are organized to meet the challenge confronting them as having to provide support for us as we execute our political mandate? I would like to talk to that when we address you next time. But honestly speaking, there will be no holy cows. As of course we don't expect that we're going to be treated with kid gloves from ourselves and appeal to be holy cows. We are not appealing for that. It will be robust engagement that will assist us going forward. And if it was that one is speaking before the marriage counselor, as I conclude, Chairperson, I would say I do.
Then, Minister, your accepted speech. It was so mouthful, and some of your comments in your introductory remarks, Minister, are being highlighted in our PRR report. Many of them, whereby we will expect the department to because our PRR report goes with observations and recommendations. So in our recommendations, I think we put in some dates and deadlines whereby we expect those recommendations to be met on those dates and deadlines that we've put in our report that was briefly considered last week in the House. So hoping the department will also receive the PRR report and go through and respond to some of the things. And also, I think on the 29th and 30th, we'll be having our strategic plan, whereby we'll be making assessment internally for our portfolio committee and for our department on how far have we been responded to all the policies and what are we expected to do for the duration of this year only, preparing for next year. So hoping also the department will receive some invitation to join us in that strategic plan of today. Where is the vein? Franz Hook. In our agenda, I think now, Minister, we thank for your input. I don't know how to call it, introductory remarks, acceptance it showed. I was looking at James Lorimer. He was attentively listening at you, but the look was just analyzing what the hell we are going to work here with this kind of a minister. I was reading that in his face. So, Peter, I want to say something maybe.
Well, Chair, it looks as if you were about to move on to the next item of the agenda, and I wondered whether we could comment on what the ministers had to say.
I'll give the space for comments.
Could I continue then?
Yes.
Well, of course, welcome, Minister. Thank you for this first meeting, this briefing, and congratulations, of course, on being appointed. I must say, I did enjoy the tenor of the points you made, the whole notion of respecting legislature and our role. Your role is very important. I do think that is true. There is an institutional arrangement that exists. You're coming into a position where there are programs and we have our views that the previous set of recommendations, and one obviously needs to move into that. And I do think your undertakings to walk the talk are important. But if I may, without being too disrespectful, may I also say there are a couple of things I think one could also mention. To start with, you are not, and I say this cognizant of the fact that this is not a party political issue, I think, you're not stepping into very big shoes. Because your department, your ministry, has got an image problem. And so I think maybe one of the first things I'd like to say is that I trust that there would be nothing from the ministry that's going to cast aspersions upon the department and that whole sphere. Because it really has been a problem for the last past 6 months or so. We would like, obviously, everything that comes from yourself and your ministry to be positive. So I would just urge that exemplary always is a good step, right? You also mentioned, Minister, that one of the projects was the Clean Audit campaign. May also suggest that it starts at home with yourselves, that your own department needs to ensure that every single year it's got a clean audit, and that should be a priority, and that you have to set the example for the country. So if your department has a weakness in the auditing, you hardly claim to be setting the example for everybody else. I am really pleased that you are concentrating on the turnaround strategy implementation side. The notion of talking, you know, is history. We really have to see that coming into, you know, as a top priority, making it work, ensuring that it's working, that the turnaround is successful. So I don't know how we're going to do that, but I'm pleased about that. And maybe just as a final thought, because one could go through a long list of things, I don't want to monopolize the floor, but one thing is, the history of this department, right from 1994, has been that no matter what title is given, all it basically concentrates on is local government. It used to be local government and provincial affairs. It did nothing about provinces, nothing. Maybe it passed a bill in 96 or 2006 on intergovernmental relations, but that's about it. There has never been much leadership or interest in the whole coordination of the three spheres and ensure that delivery takes place. So I would hope that you did speak to that. I hope that's a serious undertaking, that local government is part of what this department does, not the be all and end all. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to congratulate the Minister for having appointed to the post, and for also thank him for the brief that he's rendered. But I'll be very cautious and skeptical, Minister, on issues of traditional leaders in our country. You know, the department still to this day, we continue speaking about the turnaround strategy, and yet it takes the department over 2 years to effect changes in the traditional leadership structure. If you take an example of the village I come from, just to remove a headman in the area from August 2009, the matter is still pending. And we really wonder if such institutions can not get assistance from the department. What does the turnaround strategy speak to? And why are these delays continue being seen and experienced? But again, the treatment from the department of various kingdoms. We recently were called by the acting minister to attend the King's Forum, of which to our midst, the King's Forum consisted the deemed kings and the current kings, of which that was a conflict on its own. What is the department's vision as far as settling these challenges that have risen because of the pronouncement from the president? How do we envision to ensure that this matter is settled? But again, of concern to traditional leaders is the inconsistency on part of the department in dealing with different kingdoms. Today, we still face a situation where the Zulu Kingdom is still rendered all the services with security of about 105 personnel from all ranks, captain all the way to a sergeant. But the other kings are not rendered the same services. How do we then, as a department, ensure that we render the same services to the monarchs? But of a disturbing matter, we recently had Prince Charles visit our country,
and none of the kingdoms were contacted except that of the Zulus. Why do we continue having this inconsistency and a department that exists to ensure that we protect and preserve these institutions, and it's not playing its role?
Thanks, Chair. There's some refreshing sentiments in your speech. Nobody, least of all us, underestimate the size of the task in front of you. I think local government is in a dreadful state, and however, if you do what you say you're going to do, I think you'll take big steps towards putting it right. The Chair noticed that I was paying attention, and I was writing down some of the things that you said. So rest assured that where things are wrong, we won't pull our punches, and you may find me quoting some of your words back at you across the floor of the House. But best of luck.
Thanks, Honourable Member. If there are no comments, then... No, thanks, Minister. I think even the members now are expressing, and you could see that there is still a big challenge in front of us, of all of us. As members have highlighted, that most of the time, like Peter said, most of the time, as we have even said, we are focusing on local government, but not focusing on the leadership on provincial, how provincial government or supporting locals and districts, and how national is supporting the other three. So I think it's a challenge that is before us, which we need to get into it and resolve it and take it into its place. Our second item is missing. Some abbreviation, children. DCOG, Department of
COG.
DCOG. Or the Commutator Regional. Okay? I'm learning. on local economic development and cooperative.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to invite the DG Africa to lead in the presentation, and will come in.
Thank you, Chairperson, and congratulations on your appointment in that department. We will work very closely with you under the leadership of our new minister. Honourable members, we have a presentation that seeks to give our perspective on local economic development. And we will speak to some of the key issues in the slides that we have. Maybe let me start off by mentioning that the Constitution in Chapter 3 indicates that all municipalities must promote social and economic development. I'm quoting that verbatim. And that is a point of departure. But we know that LED is not new in this country. Has tended to have an urban bias in urban centers, and we know that LED is something that we would certainly like to see elevated from the isolated intervention, mainly in our urban areas, that cuts across all our municipalities. We also want to note that there's been a particular evolution of local economic development, but in our presentation we decided not to get too much into the history. In the next slide, Chairperson, we wanting to punctuate. Ricardo, can you just try and assist with the slides there and catch up? Thanks. Yeah, another slide before. We wanting to indicate to the committee that in 2005 we undertook some important policy-related work around local economic development, and we issued a set of policy guidelines
that also resulted in 2006 in a national framework on LED. But when we look at the past, and the minister was saying we are building on the work of our predecessors, the five-year local government strategic agenda also had a very clear focus on local economic development. And we have seen LED find prominence in the work of government through a number of other very important policy instruments, right through to the turnaround strategy. And very importantly, up to a very critical assessment that we undertook in 2010. So what is what are some of the key elements of our approach to LED? We first want to say we think it's been developed through a long process of negotiations, discussions, and practice. We even had an LED fund in the department in the late 1990s, early 2000s. And there have been a lot of different views around this. But we would like to argue that our understanding of LED is really centered on being both appreciating the role for the market, being pro-market, and also appreciating that in the context of this country it needs to be very firmly pro-poor. We identified four strategies in the next slide that need to characterize our approach to LED in this framework. Firstly, we said that we need to insist that it must lead to improving good governance, service delivery, public and market confidence in our municipalities. Secondly, it must be about identifying and exploiting competitive advantage of municipal regions. Thirdly, it's also about intensifying enterprise support in particular local areas. And lastly, also to introduce the notion of community investment programming in our different communities. In 2010, we reflected and we looked back and we undertook a review. And some of the key findings of the review included that the framework that I've just spoken about was not widely used at the local level. Also that some of the commitments seemed to have waned and decreased. If you look at how budget allocations manifested themselves in municipalities, and also that there was a need to increase coordination at the national provincial level between sector departments and also across the different spheres. And also many of the LED partnerships were not lasting and sustainable. But also we felt that many of the projects did not have the sufficient scale to have the impact that we desired. But having said all of this, LED still remains a priority that we're committing, we are committed to pursuing. So in the turnaround strategy, we have begun to talk about LED as referring to an approach that really encourages investment. I mean, that is the anchor. And of course, that would include investment by big business, small business, tourist industries, large sector economy, management in mining, manufacturing, and or farming. But the anchor is really an investment. Some of the key principles that we identified for accelerating LED implementation included making it a critical component of the local government turnaround strategy and outcome 9. Also advancing the notion that our department needs to be a single window of coordination around LED, and also to ensure that there's alignment of our work around LED with the new growth path, IPEP 2, the Comprehensive Rural Development Program that focuses on rural areas predominantly. Also, another key principle is that of creating functional partnerships between our municipalities and local private sector, and we'll come back to this very important notion of a partnership that we think is absolutely critical. Also, it's about facilitating and unlocking local investment opportunities of scale that we think will lead to sustainable private job creation. And then also about leveraging local procurement. Now, as we come to be a little bit more practical, what are some of the key levers, and then we'll end off on some of the concrete things that we're doing. Firstly, we've already indicated that it must really assist us in promoting good governance and democratic participation of our people. We need to ensure that there's available economic infrastructure at the local level, and also that municipal land and property is made available. We need to focus on reducing red tape. I mean, this is particularly important for investment and private sector players. It's about also local competitive and comparative advantage. And then, of course, skills development is very critical. Now, having said where we come from and our approach. What are some of the specific things that we are doing and what is the progress to date? We have committed ourselves to establishing in the local government turnaround strategy to creating jobs through a system that is supportive of private sector employment and investment in our district municipalities. Concretely, what that has meant is that we have promoted and facilitated a number of advisory councils. We've set ourselves a target of 10 for the current financial year that we're in. We've managed to facilitate and support three of these councils to date. We are also focusing on facilitating a number of catalytic business ventures. And again, our target is 10 for the year, and we have realized them four to date. Now, again, some of the detail around this is that the July Cabinet Lekgotla endorsed and supported our approach to establishing these business and development forums within every single district, and of course that has led us to focus on a lot of process matters and working with stakeholders in the different parts of the country. So the notion of partnership, the third bullet, has really been central. We have also tried to mobilize funding from the DBSA Jobs Fund, and we're also partnering with some international development agencies such as GIZ in addition to the DBSA. We've also developed kind of a concept document to assist us in understanding and giving a meaning to this. So in conclusion on this slide, we have engaged with a number of districts, and we continue to our intention to really to ensure that as many districts as possible have these business forums. So that is concretely how we've decided to focus our energy in promoting and ensuring that all our municipalities have a role. What we did not say explicitly is that as part of the IDP, all municipalities are required to have local economic and development plans. Just two last slides on our approach to cooperatives. We really think that this is an important flagship program that we have as part of Outcome 9 and the local government turnaround strategy. If you look at the local government turnaround strategy on the left-hand side, we have said that we want to facilitate and implement ward-based economic planning. We went further than that to say that each ward must have at least one economic development product. And we'd want to also ensure that through LG Trust we enhance for job creation and sustainable livelihoods through LED. In Outcome 9 specifically, we have also said that we want ward-based programs to sustain livelihoods, and we've also said in very concrete terms that as a ward-based program, if we would like to see a situation where 30% of work opportunities created through the community work program are linked to functional cooperatives by 2014. So this is how we've tried to get down our concrete activities around the cooperatives. So in conclusion on the slide, we have this program called the Ward-Based Cooperative Program, and it is driven by a number of key objectives that also speak to LED, which include economic empowerment, inclusivity, participation of the poor and underprivileged, unemployed. Also, it's about social mobilization and, of course, partnerships that we spoke about. So these elements, again, are very real in the way in which we are giving effect to them. In conclusion, progress to date, we have a project that we have been working together with the South African National Apex Cooperative SUNACO. This entity is registered in terms of the Cooperatives Act 2005. And this entity is also a member of the NEDLAC, and it represents all cooperatives in the country. This we've also been providing following services on behalf of the department. We've been assisting with social mobilization, assisting with the registration of co-ops, facilitating training and also access to markets and to finance. We have said to date we have managed to support about 520 co-ops, and then we have an annual target against annual target of 6,317 job opportunities have been created through our cooperatives to date. And we have implemented an agent has reported the target has been 6,317, 4,080 job opportunities that have been created. There are a number of challenges, but we think that cooperatives are really central to our overall local economic development and job creation objectives for the country. So, Chair, that is the overview. My colleague, Mr. Ricardo Hansby, is the DG responsible, but he will assist him in the engagement that we'll be having. Thank you very much.
Members, maybe before we can go through the questions, if we can have maybe 5 minutes liquid balancing break. 5 minutes.